680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. A pretty gloomy day, and the weather forecast has changed again. I got to tell you, the weather folks have changed the forecast for this day 5 or 6 times in the last couple of days. They obviously had no idea what it was going to be. First, they called for partly sunny. Then yesterday, they changed it to cloudy with showers. And then this morning, they were back to partly sunny. It was going to be a pretty nice day, a little cool. And now they've changed it again, mostly cloudy. Chance of showers this afternoon. And if you have not been outside yet today, it is rather cool. They're looking at a high of 64. I don't know. We may struggle to get there. We're still in the upper 50s right now. So it's not a very pleasant day. Of course, a week or so ago, we would have given anything for a day like this, right? We were still dealing with the April cold. You get a little taste of the good stuff, which we had almost all this week. My goodness, a couple of days ago we had 80 degrees. Yesterday we had a high of 76. And then suddenly it turns dark and chilly, and you say, oof, oof. Unfortunately, the forecast is not so good for the weekend either, talking about rain showers, or at least a chance of them, Saturday and Sunday. Mother's Day. Mother's Day weekend coming up. We have open talk to begin the program today. Our phone number is 283-2525. We're going to be chatting a little bit later with Rachel Slade, who has researched the story of the sinking of the cargo ship El Faro, which went down in a hurricane a couple of years back in the Bermuda Triangle with a loss, rather a large loss of life, 30-some people. So the question that intrigued Rachel Slade, how in today's day and age, with advanced radio communications, radar, GPS, and everything else, how could a cargo ship be lost at sea? How could it sail into the middle of a hurricane? She has researched this quite heavily, and we'll talk to her about it a little bit later on the program today, Rachel Slade. Also today, we continue our visits to area golf courses. It's been interesting so far, has it not? Today, we'll talk with John Aubrey from Aubrey's Dubs Dread course right on the outskirts of Butler. So that's coming up a little bit later on the program today. But open talk to begin with, our phone number, 283-2525, 283-2525. You know, we have primary election day coming up next week. Yeah, Tuesday is election day. That's sneaking up on you. Now, there hasn't been a whole lot of buzz about it. Probably the biggest buzz is the fact that our congressional district boundaries have been redrawn. You remember that controversy from earlier this year. And members of Congress are up for election this year. So that'll be a little bit different for some of you. For others, it'll be just the same. But we have many other offices up for election this year. State representatives, lots of other stuff too. Primary election day on Tuesday of next week. We're going to be holding a gubernatorial election in the fall as well. Will Pennsylvanians re-elect Governor Tom Wolf? Or will they go to one of the Republican candidates? There are three of them vying for the GOP nomination to run against Tom Wolf in November. So we'll find out how that goes next Tuesday. We'll have election coverage for you here on WISR Tuesday night following the closure of the polls. So we'll bring you up to date on everything we have as it becomes available next Tuesday night. Primary election day, Tuesday. We were talking earlier this week about, remembering back when there used to be names at the beginning of telephone numbers. You know, a telephone number might be Olive 3, started out with a name or with a couple of letters. And then we were talking about prefixes, how you used to be able to tell from the three-digit prefix where a person was calling from, or where a person lived, for that matter. If it was 282 or 283 or 285 or 287, it was butler. That's all changed now. You can have all kinds of different prefixes with the advent of cell phones and so on. But I had a friend of mine tell me, and I never realized this before. He said, I heard you talking about, used to be butler was nothing but 28 something, 28, 28 this, 28 that. He said, do you realize that that probably came from BU? Because the number 2 on a phone dial also corresponds to B. ABC, that's 2. And 8 corresponds to U, T or U or V. So it was like a light bulb going on over my head. I said, well, you're absolutely right, Mitch. I never thought about that before. So that's probably why back in the day, and I don't know this for a fact, but I think it's pretty good guess. That's probably why all of the butler numbers used to start with 28. Because that would correspond to BU, the first two letters of butler, right? Yeah. Never dawned on me before. That's gone now, though. We don't use the name system or the letter system. In fact, we've expanded to 10 digits now instead of 7. You need the area code and then the three-digit prefix and then the regular number. Anybody else realize that? That 28 corresponded to BU? Never dawned on me. 283-2525 is the number. Can you remember what your phone number was when you were a kid? When you were living with your parents? For some of you, maybe that wasn't all that long ago. For others, it may be decades. Can you still remember your phone number whenever you were a kid at your house? Yeah, I can. I can. In fact, it's one of the few phone numbers that I can remember anymore because you don't have to memorize them anymore. All you got to do is push a button on your cell phone and there you are. Or tap a name that pops up and bingo, it automatically dials it for you. Phone number 283-2525 here on the It's Your Turn program today. 283-2525. Today would have been the birthday of what some people think is the greatest American musical composer. You know who we're talking about? Who was born on this date? He's long dead. Yeah. Think about it for a minute. We'll talk about it in just a moment or so. Let's get to the people, though. First of all, here's our phone number, open talk at 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you today?
Oh, pretty good. I always tell people if they want to lie and get paid for it, to be a weatherman. Think about it.
That's true.
Almost every day they lie to us.
Well, I'm not sure that it actually qualifies as lying, but their forecasts sometimes aren't very accurate, huh?
I know. When they say it's partly sunny, it's also partly cloudy.
Yeah, kind of cover all your bases when you say that. But today's another day when they missed it pretty badly, and it's kind of disappointing because, first of all, it's not a very pretty day to look at, and when you step outside, it's pretty chilly today.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, wasn't supposed to be like this.
Yeah, so you could be a weatherman.
Don't have to be right very much if you're a weatherman, huh?
Yeah.
Thanks, my friend. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, sure. Bye-bye. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk on the program today. I don't like to come down too hard on the weather, folks. I realize it's as much of an art as a science, and you get different interpretations of, the various weather models and so on and so forth. Yeah. What irks me more than anything, it's not so much that they miss the forecast occasionally. or sometimes a lot. It's the fact that they will never admit that they were wrong. You know, instead of coming on and saying, well, gosh, we missed the forecast for today, they just carry on as if, you know, if they had predicted sunshine and it pours down rain, they'll come on at 6 o'clock in the evening or 11 o'clock at night and say, well, some rain moving through the area today, as if they had predicted it, when they really didn't. I guess that's the first law of being a TV weather person. Never admit that you were wrong. Which is kind of silly, isn't it? Yeah, do you watch them? Some of the weather folks on the Pittsburgh TV stations have been there for quite a while. Jeff Frizzella from Channel 2, he's been there for, well, ever since Bob Kuzma retired, right? And that's got to be 12, 15 years ago, I would guess. Something like that. Weather people, yeah. Well, you know, they do the best they can. It would just make me a little happier if every once in a while they'd say, by gosh, we just missed it. We just missed that forecast yesterday. Our phone number is 283-2525, open talk today. So do you know who I'm talking about when I say greatest American musical composer? Irving Berlin. Yeah, today would have been Irving Berlin's birthday. He was born on this date in 1888. And what a collection of tunes he wrote. White Christmas, Easter Parade, Happy Holiday, Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better, No Business Like Show Business, and of course, God Bless America. And many, many others, too. Irving Berlin. Back to the people we go. It's open talk. Here's our phone number, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello, Dave.
Howdy.
You're talking about weathermen. I have to tell you a story. My son, who is out of state, I'm not going to say where, but in a different state, worked for a period of time for a security company. His job was to guard a weatherman.
Wow.
The TV station weatherman had received so many death threats from his weather report that the TV station paid for a security guard to guard him.
And, wow, I never heard that before. That's amazing.
I know. We couldn't believe it either. We couldn't believe it. Our son would sit in the TV station all day long while the weatherman was there. And the good part about the job was he got to meet a lot of celebrities from that local town and well-known worldwide celebrities. But, yeah, he guarded the weatherman for, well, several months, and then he got a much, much better job. I don't know whether they still guard the guy or not, but he is still there.
Wow.
And that's been, I don't know, 12, 13 years.
That is pretty amazing. I mean, I'm sure there's some people who get irritated when the weather forecast turns out to be wrong, but gosh, threats to some people. Do you watch the Pittsburgh TV weather people?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite?
We're a Jeff Frizzella fan.
Yeah, Channel 2, Jeff Frizzella. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I know I got up this morning. It was supposed to be nice. I got up this morning, and it wasn't nice, and I looked at radar because I had all these plans outside. And there really wasn't anything on radar. Then I realized the radar I was looking at was from Thursday morning, not Friday morning. So still wearing a sweatshirt, you know, in the middle of May, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I shouldn't be wearing a sweatshirt.
Yeah, I was out to grab a bite a couple of hours ago, and I was surprised that with absolutely no sunshine at all, and as you say, that's a change because they had predicted partly sunny skies. It's
right.
Pretty chilly out there today.
It is. It is.
We've got, I'm just checking right now, 59 degrees, and we do have a few pop-up showers across the region, so we'll see. Well, we get a little spoiled, don't we, when we get a couple of those days when it's up around 80.
Yeah, and the weatherman's saying we're going to have it next week, so I hope he is right.
Is it supposed to get warm again next week?
That's what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm. I seldom look more than 2 or 3 days ahead because
well,
I know they're going to change it. So,
with my the way my life is, I got to have something to look forward to, and that's looking forward to sunny weather.
Amen. Thanks, my friend. Good to talk to you today.
Okay, Dave. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks much.
Bye.
283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. I got an email the other day. It was last week, I guess, one day last week. I can't believe that these things are still being sent out. And that apparently some people are still falling for it. I mean, we hear about scams, and when we hear about one, we try to warn people, you know, here in this area, that people are getting phone calls about this or that or the other thing. But how many years ago was it that this whole deal about emails and phone calls from Nigeria were a scam? And has that put them to bed? Well, I thought so, but no. Just last week, here at the radio station at my email address here at work, I got this email. I'll read it for you verbatim. Good news. I have been mandated to inform you by the Senate Committee Chairman on Finance and Appropriation in the Nigerian Senate that your long overdue funds, which amount to the sum of $7.5 million, have been granted a waiver, thereby approved for payment via ATM card. You are to reconfirm your current contact information to avoid wrongful delivery. And then they ask you for your full name, your current address, and your telephone number. And they say, once we get all this information, your ATM card will be programmed for delivery to your doorstep, and you can commence withdrawals from any ATM machine close to you. So, gosh, you know, I guess I'd better get on the stick. $7.5 million waiting for me in Nigeria. How could anybody believe this stuff? And yet, you know, some people fall for it, and they give them the information, and you know what that leads to? Identity theft and everything else. This email came by... it ended. Congratulations. Signed by Vincent Kobe, personal assistant to the Senate Committee Chairman on Finance and Appropriation in Lagos, Nigeria. Well, thank you very much. I have to try to get to this afternoon. $7.5 million. I wouldn't want to miss out on that. My. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave.
Hi.
I don't know if you guys had this on the air earlier, but there's a stamp show at the Tanglewood Center this weekend.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people are interested in Butler history, and they have a lot of historical Butler, like, postcards and first day covers and things. It's very interesting. But the funny thing is they sell all kinds of different stuff, and it's not real expensive either. You can buy whatever. But I thought the funniest thing, they always have their things called mourning cards, like in mourning, like somebody died.
Wow.
And the edges are black. But the weird thing is a lot of times the whole address would be like Dave Malarkey Parker. No zip code,
huh?
No address. So apparently your postman would just have to know where the Malarkeys lived.
I never heard of such a thing. A mourning card, huh?
Yeah. Oh. I didn't know they were there either, but you know, they're usually around the turn of the century. And I bought one a couple years ago. It was to Elizabeth Reed, which I thought was kind of interesting because the Allman Brothers actually have a song called In Memory of Elizabeth Reed.
Hmm.
So I picked that up for a dollar just because...
So people would send these, it was kind of the precursor of today's sympathy card, I guess, huh?
I guess so, yeah. And it's just, you know, and it's kind of, they have things broken down in so many categories. Like if you know somebody that's into, like, say, soccer, there's all these soccer cards from around the world, different countries. It's, you could easily spend an hour looking around.
This is the Butler County Philatelic Society, or Stamp
Collecting
Society.
Yeah, I saw the paper. This is like their 104th show.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been around, but it is kind of a dying hobby. A lot of people are, you know, don't do it. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, you could go to Woolworths and buy a little, as a fake paper kind of sack with all these stamps that were already ripped off, and you had to mm-hmm. come home and soak them in water to get the stamp, and then there was a stamp book. Still have it, but you know, people, the fact that people don't use the post office as much as they used to.
Do you still, you still have your stamp collection book from when you were a kid? That's amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It survived the moves.
I did that for a while, and I was a kid too, I don't know, probably, I'm guessing 7 or 8 years old, or something like that. And I got a stamp collecting kit for Christmas one year, and I mean, I messed around with it for a couple of months, and then that was it. I'm kind of embarrassed
to say.
Yeah,
that's kind of, I think there was one company that was really big. I can't think of it, but it was like a big binder, and it had like different countries, and had United States stamps, and it had like a black and white photograph of the stamp.
Mm-hmm. And then you put the real stamp over top of it. Yeah.
Yeah, use the hinge and put it in there. So
that must be exactly the same book that I had.
Probably the same company. I can't think of the name right now, and I don't have it in front of me. But
I know you got a whole, kind of a pocket load of stamps that came with the kit that you could sort through. Most of them were obscure countries from Asia or Africa or somewhere like that. You had the hinges, something that I never even knew about until I got that kit out. And they had the stamps came in a kind of like a wax paper little envelope. And I hate to tell you, but, you know, that's where we get the terminology for the heroin containers today.
Stamp bag, yeah.
That's right. When you see a police report that, you know, so many stamp bags of heroin, that's what they're talking about.
Yeah, because they're glycerin lined, so nothing sticks to them.
Yeah,
so
yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. Hopefully the heroin dealers don't show up and buy some.
So you don't collect stamps anymore, though?
You know what? Now that they went adhesive, they're actually hard to get off the paper.
Oh, I never thought about that.
And there's, you know, I used to get a little, there was a magazine at the library, they had the Philatech, and it used this kind of product and it'll get it off. So they're kind of hard to get off. But yeah, I'll save something that comes in, it's like a commemorative or something like that.
Let me explain to people who never had one of these little kits when they were a kid or whatever. Of course, back in those days, you had to lick a stamp, you know, to make it stick. It had glue on the back, but you didn't want to do that when you put it in your album because you'd never be able to get it off again, you know, if you wanted to sell it or something like that. So they had these hinges, they were called. And the best way to describe it is it was a very thin, almost like onion skin piece that about the size of one of these Listerine mouth strips that you see today. And you would.
It was glue on it,
yeah. And you licked it, and you folded it in half, first of all. And you licked it, and you stuck one side to the back of the stamp and the other side to your album so that you could actually kind of lift up the stamp once it was there. And then if you had to take it off for any reason or you wanted to sell it, you could just take it off very easily. It was a good idea. I never realized. I never thought.
Yeah, it
today
kind of changed the hobby because they're harder to get off.
Yeah, today it's all the the automatic stick'em stamps, and you know those hinges wouldn't work. I wouldn't unless they covered the whole back of the stamp.
Hey, speaking of stamps, real quick, and I'll get off the air. But released a Mr. Rogers stamp a couple weeks ago.
I saw that.
Went to the post office like a week later. They're like, "Yeah, we sold out of that 4 times already. We're not sure if we can get any more in."
Well, there. I had the a couple of guys from the Butler Post Office on the program earlier this week.
Oh, okay, I missed that. Sorry.
Jack Hutchison was here, and the postmaster from Butler, Matt Kucinich, and we were talking a little bit about stamps because we knew this stamp show was coming up. It's today and tomorrow, by the way. At
I think till 5 tonight.
Tanglewood, I think,
isn't it? 4 tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, it's at Tanglewood. But anyway, because I'd asked the postmaster, Matt. I said, I just saw a story that this is the 100th anniversary of airmail in the United States, which I didn't realize. It started in 1918. And I guess when you think about it, you know, with the invention of the airplane by the Wright brothers, and then within 20 years or so, they started airmail service. But the postmaster said they don't have them yet in Butler. They haven't been released yet. But he said, I've seen pictures of them. And I said, I saw a picture of them, too. There's two of them. And I saw them in a Wire story. And here's the thing. They look like stamps from 100 years ago. You know, they have no resemblance from the stamps today. They're kind of an old, like a lithograph, you know, line drawing type thing. And pretty neat looking, really. So you can look for those. I think they're going to be released later this month, Matt said.
Yeah, and actually one of the most valuable stamps was, I don't know if it was airmail, but it had an upside down airplane. It was a Flying Jenny. Those stamps are worth, if you can find one, they're like worth, you know, they're like the Honus Wagner of stamp world.
I can't understand how they do that. I mean, you know, when they're printing them, isn't there somebody standing there watching them come out of the printer?
Well, the thing is, they're supposed to catch them and destroy them. So to get out, you know, that's not many got out. But, that's another thing, too. The older stamps were printed like money in Taglio printing, and now they're more just whatever, they're flat. If you look at older stamps, they look like money. You can feel them. They got ridges.
Mm-hmm.
Newer stamps are just flat. I'm not sure what the printing process is, but
plus, you know, the new ones are forever.
Yeah, I'm gonna build a house out of this. Hey, good talking to you, Dave.
Same here. Thanks, my friend.
Bye bye.
283-2525 is our number. Open talk on the program today. 283-2525. I guess you can still buy stamps for a specific amount of money. I don't know. The last time I did it was a long, long time ago. I needed to get some extra postage on a couple of odd-shaped envelopes. But probably 95% or more of the stamps that are now sold are the forever stamp. And there's no monetary denomination listed on them. It just says USA forever. And if you buy one today or buy a whole book of them today, and then the price of stamps goes up in a year or two or three or ten, doesn't matter. You can still use them. Even though you paid a lower price for them, they're good forever. It's a good idea, I think. Yeah. Why didn't we think of that before? I don't know. 283-2525, open talk. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
This is Bill. I want to talk about weather.
Yes, Bill.
I used to fly airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And you better make the chapter 6 in the book never changes on the weather. How the high pressure pushes out the low pressure, you know. That was a while ago. Now my nephew's interested in it. But
so you had to check weather before you took off, I guess, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a four-seater, Piper Cherokee, just right for cross-country.
Is that a single-engine plane, Bill?
Yeah. Yeah, four big cylinders, four-cylinder, two spark plugs in each one. Me and my family used to travel out to New Jersey. And it took 2 hours, 20 minutes when the westerly winds are pushing you, and 3 hours and 20 minutes, and you're going against the westerly winds.
When you're coming back, huh?
Yeah.
Where did you fly out of, the Butler Airport?
Well, I started at Zainopal.
Okay, yeah.
Me and my older brother, well, he had his VFR. Vision flight rules, the one tragic accident, the assistant mechanic down there had an experimental airplane, and they're kind of dangerous, it was on the front page of Butler Eagle back then in the 80s.
I've seen those experimental aircraft, and also those ones where you're just like sitting in a lawn chair, you know, and you have kind of a cloth wing above you. I don't know. That would not be my cup of tea, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, well, I think, John Denver had experimental there, and I don't know if he knew how much gas it used. They're dangerous to me, but the one I had, it was a 65, 180 horsepower, and it was a pretty good airplane.
I think the one that John Denver had that he died in was, I don't think it was one of those, lawn chair type things. I think it was
No, it's, yeah, it was
It's like a kit that he had built or something like that.
Yeah, right? I don't know if he built it. I don't know, but I guess he enjoyed flying. So that was exciting. Flying an airplane.
You don't fly anymore?
No. It gets kind of expensive. Well, my brother, he gave it up, and he went for a houseboat down on the Mississippi, down in Memphis.
Now, do you fly commercially, on
No, I never did.
Never did?
No, I didn't.
Just in the small planes, huh?
Yeah. So that's it's expensive career. I mean, just owning an airplane, you know.
I have a couple of friends who I call them private pilots. I don't know whether that's the correct terminology or not, but they're not commercial pilots. And I guess it's something you kind of get in your blood, you know.
Yeah, well, you figure that'd be a quicker way of traveling, not as fast as the big jets. But, it was a good time, and so I might get my nephew interested in it. I gave him the books on it. So.
Well, make sure he checks the weather forecast.
That's right. You know, one day I was looking up in the sky, and I see there's a hole in the cloud there. My instructor said, that's for suckers.
Thanks, Bill. Good to talk with you today.
Okay. Take care.
Sure.
Bye.
You too. We are out of time for Open Talk. We'll be doing it again next Monday. I'm not sure. Well, plenty of time for Open Talk next week. Anyway, we're going to be we'll take a break here, and we're going to be talking with Rachel Slade next. A riveting story, a true story, about the loss of a cargo ship a couple of years back, and a sad story. Quite a few people lost their lives. It was the El Faro. Went down in a hurricane in the Bermuda Triangle. No survivors. Rachel Slade is our guest. She has researched this quite a bit, and we'll talk to her about it coming up here on the It's Your Turn program in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller Shoes. Miller Shoes at 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, where their Mother's Day spring sale is underway. Yeah. Mothers have been shopping at Miller Shoes for 125 years. That's a tradition. Spring SAS sale. Women's entire stock of SAS comfort shoes, 15% off. The entire stock of women's. And that includes their sandals, too. Maybe you didn't know that SAS made sandals. They are just as comfortable as their famous shoes. And Miller Shoes is your headquarters locally for SAS, comfort shoes and sandals. And right now, spring SAS sale, 15% off women's entire stock. Also, the entire stock of men's and women's athletic shoes, 20% off right now. And all the famous brands, you'll find them in Miller's, New Balance and Saucony and Nike, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, ASICS, ProPet. 15% off foam treads, and hundreds of pairs of their finest ladies' shoes, all on racks for easy browsing, $30. At Miller's Shoes, during the spring sale going on right now. Happy Mother's Day from the folks at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler.
Dr. Andrew Szabo of Butler Health System with the story of a remarkable recovery.
Joe's never the kind to be still for long. A hernia can stop that in a hurry. The technology we use makes surgery less invasive, and that makes recovery less challenging. That's a big investment for a community hospital. But then again, we're not the average community hospital.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Listeners, we have a story to tell you on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. You may remember this news story from not all that long ago, a few years ago, when a ship disappeared, a container ship disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle. Well, Rachel Slade, our guest on this segment of It's Your Turn, has written about this story in a book entitled Into the Raging Sea. Rachel Slade, nice to make your acquaintance. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Refresh our memory on the disappearance of this ship. It was called the El Faro. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's correct. And El Faro in Spanish actually means lighthouse.
Ah.
The ship was on a regular run between Jacksonville, Florida, and Puerto Rico. This was a twice-weekly run, delivering all the modern necessities of life to our American island. And on this particular voyage, there was a hurricane brewing in the Atlantic. And the captain was convinced that the hurricane would track north. And that's what most of the forecast said. And he stuck to that assumption, and unfortunately they sailed straight into Category 3 hurricane, and the ship vanished. And for a long time, we spent a lot of time and money searching for that ship after she went down. There was a huge rescue effort when she lost communication. It is truly tragic. We lost 33 mariners aboard that ship, and they were 28 of them were American.
And this was in the autumn of 2015, right?
That's right. The ship went down on October 1st, 2015. Yeah, off of the Bahamas. So you're right. It was in the Bermuda Triangle.
Which adds kind of a spooky factor into this, although obviously it was the storm, the hurricane that took the ship down. So, I mean, we have... We have radio communication today. We have all sorts of radar for tracking bad weather. Did this stuff all fail? Did we have any last-minute radio communications with the El Faro?
Well, that's exactly right, and that's exactly why I wanted to look at this story in much greater depth, because naturally they had all kinds of communication systems on the ship, and they had weather forecasting. So how, you know, in this day and age, when I can track my dog, I can track my daughter, how could a ship vanish? That's what I wanted to find out. And so the truth is that the ship was old. She was 40 years old, and she did have outdated systems, but that doesn't explain everything. I think, and you can read this in my book, obviously, but it was really a communication breakdown. You know, weather is so much about uncertainty. And, you know, we have the National Hurricane Center, and they put out these forecasts, but they're predictions, right? And they are only as good as the information that we put into them. And these days, with climate change and with the oceans warming, it's harder for them to accurately understand how a hurricane might perform. And in this case, the Atlantic was actually 2 degrees warmer in that area than it's ever been. And so while they thought that this hurricane was just going to kind of dissipate, that's not at all what it did. It quickly intensified so quickly that they couldn't even keep up with it. And so the captain consistently had outdated information about what this hurricane was going to do. And in fact, it ended up being one of the most powerful hurricanes in the Atlantic, but it was compact. So we didn't hear about it. It didn't affect islands like, you know, this past season's hurricanes. So we didn't, you know, it was kind of a limited event, but it was catastrophic for the people on the ship.
Tell us a little bit about the ship, the Alfaro. It was a cargo ship. Did it keep stuff in the hold, or was it one of those container ships that had, you know, like tractor trailers stacked on the open deck? What kind of a ship was it?
So that's a great question, actually, because I'll try to keep this answer quite short. But it would be good to read my book to find out more about this, because the history of shipping is very much about the design of these ships, right? So this ship was actually designed in the 60s before we had containerization. So that's what you're talking about, those boxes on the top of the ship.
Yeah.
So it wasn't actually designed for containers. It was kind of one of these intermediate designs, which was built for what they called roll-on, roll-off cargo. So it was, the idea was you drive a tractor trailer right up onto the ship and down into the holds, and then lock it in place. So in 2000, the shipping company decided that they wanted to accommodate containers, because that's, you know, since that ship was built, that's where things went.
Mm-hmm.
And so they modified the ship to accommodate containers. So now it was carrying cars below, trailers in the middle, and containers above. And that completely changed the physical dynamics of the ship and how she performed in the open ocean, and especially when challenged by 120 mile per hour winds.
Wow. You know, I've seen video of some of those container ships, and I don't know anything about sailing on the open seas, but they always look out of balance to me. I mean, you know, you see the video of them, and they got these trailers, these containers stacked up, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 high, and I'm thinking, how do they stay on there? Isn't it kind of top-heavy?
You're right. I mean, sometimes they do look funny, but if you look at modern ships, and I'm talking about ships built in the past 10, 15 years, they're really fat. They're really wide, and they're wide all the way down until their little nub of a keel. So they're actually very stable because, I mean, as you can imagine, they're not that tippy. They have a low center of gravity. And by the way, we now have mega ships that can carry 20,000 containers. I mean, for me, it's almost beyond human comprehension, right, that these enormous ships are sailing around the world carrying so many containers. Alfaro was, compared to that, quite small. And she did have containers, but only three high. And those containers actually stack together like Legos, so they kind of click together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a system of turnbuckles and strapping that holds them together. That said, there is an estimate that ships lose internationally, globally, ships lose an average of over 700 containers a year. And if you ever saw All Is Lost, the movie, the incredible movie with Robert Redford in it, it's just him on a sailboat. Did you see that movie?
I'm familiar with it, but I have actually not seen it, no.
Okay, well, it's really terrific. It's a tour de force. It's just Robert Redford on a sailboat. And the opening scene is he wakes up in the middle of the night. He's somewhere in the Pacific, and he's hit a rogue container. And this happens a lot. There are tons of containers floating out there in our oceans, and they're hazards. They're hazards for ship, and they're hazards for boats, and especially, you know, small craft.
Yeah, it'd be like an iceberg, you know, like when the Titanic hit an iceberg, right? Yeah.
It's exactly like an iceberg, because most of the container is under the water. You can't see it until you hit it. And they're heavy.
Yeah.
So this ship, the Alfaro, lost obviously all of its cargo, and all of that cargo went down with the ship. It peeled off as the ship was going down. And I also wanted to mention that the Alfaro went down deeper than the Titanic. She sunk in 15,000 feet of water. It's pretty intense.
Folks, this is a fascinating story. It's sad, obviously, because there were 33 lives lost. But it's a riveting story. You know, how could this happen relatively recent times. It was one of the worst American shipping disasters in decades. We're speaking with Rachel Slade, who's written a book about this true story. The title is Into the Raging Sea. I know that you're in the Boston area, Rachel. Is that how you got interested in it? I know, you know, a lot of fishing industry up in New England. It sounds like, from what we've discussed so far, that you know quite a bit about ships. Is that how your interest was piqued to write this book? Or?
Well, Dave, I'm from the East Coast. You know, I was born in Baltimore, another big port. Raised in Philadelphia, went to school in New York. That's, by the way, the second largest port in America. Boston used to be a big port. We don't have much of a port anymore. And I also spend a lot of time on the coast of Maine. So I have never lived further than just about 5 miles from the ocean.
Uh-huh.
And I think of America's maritime history as the one story that explains who we are. We all, almost all of us, came on ships to America, our ancestors, either voluntarily or by force.
Mm-hmm.
And so ships and the ocean is just part of who we are. It's in our DNA. And when I heard about this, I was intensely interested in connecting with an industry that really shaped them. Americans and who we are. I also wanted to mention that the reason this book is so good, and I mean, I'm talking about my own book, but I mean, the reason this story is so good is because they actually recovered the ship's black box.
Ah.
So the National Transportation Safety Board sent 3 missions out to the ship, and the final mission, which was 8 months after she sank, they used a robot because, you know, the pressure 15,000 feet down is unbelievable. You know, you couldn't send a manned vessel down there. So they sent a robot down there, and they were able to extricate the black box from where it was fastened. And this black box is remarkable. It had 26 hours of audio recorded on the bridge leading up to the very final minutes of the ship. 26 hours. So the National Transportation Safety Board spent more than 1,000 manned hours transcribing this audio, and now we have a 500-page transcript of the discussions between the officers and the crew leading up to the El Faro's tragic end. It is so intense, and I use this dialogue to humanize the event, to talk about the people on the ship, to talk about how they make the decisions, and, you know, to show readers, like, they're so human. They're just like you and me. And as I was reading it, you really wonder, what would I have done in that situation? Mm. How was there any possibility that I could have done something? And, you know, you just identify with these people, their struggle, knowing that they're going in, they're entering a dangerous place, and they can't convince their captain to turn around. It's so intense.
Listeners, we have a few more minutes to chat with Rachel Slade. We have to take a quick break here, though, so we'll do that, and we'll pick up our conversation with her here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
The big day is almost here. Your son or daughter is about to graduate high school. Once the festivities are over, it's time to start thinking about college and, more importantly, how to pay for it. That's why the Armco Credit Union is proud to offer a brand new scholarship program. They are giving away $5,000 in total scholarship funds to graduating seniors who are bound for full-time enrollment at a college, university, or trade school. To fill out an application, visit armcocu.com. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and federally insured by NCUA.
I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724.
Welcome back. If you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Rachel Slade. She is the author of a riveting new book, true story, of course, called Into the Raging Sea, the sinking of the Alfaro, a cargo ship that went down in October of 2015 in a hurricane in the Bermuda Triangle. 33 lives were lost. You mentioned a Robert Redford film. Let me ask you about a couple of other things in mass media that listeners may be familiar with. There was a film some years ago called Perfect Storm. Are you familiar with that one, Rachel?
I am. I actually read the book after I got a deal with a publishing company to write this book. So I thought, I might as well read the Bible of sea adventures.
And that was a true story as well, wasn't it?
It was, and Sebastian Younger is a fabulous reporter, a journalist, and a fabulous writer. And actually, that story, of course, took place very close to me. Mm-hmm. That was in Gloucester, Massachusetts. The fisherman came from Gloucester, Massachusetts, and I'm in Boston. The difference between that story and mine, of course, is that the writer, Sebastian, didn't know what happened to the mariners aboard that sword fishing boat. We know.
Yeah.
We have the transcript. We have very, very detailed analysis of what happened to that ship, her vulnerabilities, the weather. We know exactly where she went down. We found the accident site. So this is a very different story, but I really applaud Sebastian Younger's work, and it certainly is a seminal work in the maritime Canaan. So, yeah, it's a terrific book. That came out, I think, in 98. So it's been about 20 years, I think, since we've had a really good nonfiction book about maritime tragedy.
Was there ever an official determination or a cause of why the El Faro went down?
Yes. So if you read the National Transportation Safety Board report, which, by the way, is almost 200 pages, and the Coast Guard actually issued their own report coming out of the investigation, which is also about 160 pages, you'll see over and over again that the blame lies with the captain, ultimately. I mean, there are many other things that they point out, regulations they'd like to change or strengthen, but ultimately, as is the case with almost all of these accidents, the captain is to blame. And for me, that was deeply unsatisfying. And I think for a lot of mariners, it was completely unsatisfying, because we know how complicated it is to be a decision maker, to be a captain in these conditions. So, I mean, it's a complicated story. But, yes, ultimately, you know, responsibility lies at the captain's feet.
The captain was Captain Michael Davidson, age 52. What do we know about him, Rachel Slade?
So Michael Davidson is a native of Portland, Maine, and he had been a captain on and off for more than a decade. He certainly had enough experience to be able to make good decisions. However, the company was going through a major restructuring. There were new boats on order, and they were staffing up those new boats. And the captain knew that he would probably not be on the crew of the new boats, which meant his career could possibly be over. He's young. He's 52 years old. He had two daughters in college. He had high expenses. You know, he had spent a lifetime pursuing this career. He was in a very difficult state of mind at the moment, and I think that really colored his vision. I do believe that he was trying to prove that he was the kind of master for their new class of ships, the kind of person who didn't flinch at bad weather, who delivered goods on time. He wanted to show that he was brave, I think. And that's my analysis throughout the book. He could be a villain, but I believe that we are all victims of circumstance.
I would suspect that many Americans, now you live in Boston, you say most of your life you've been close to the sea. Most Americans have not been, and I suspect that that many of us don't realize just how important the shipping industry is to the American way of life because we're not around the sea. Would I be correct on that?
Dave, I am so glad that you said that because that is absolutely true. 90% of everything that we touch has spent some time on a ship. I mean, just if you look around the room, wherever you are, you know, the parts in your car, your printer, your laptop, you know, your clothing on your back, everything has probably spent some time on a ship. There are literally thousands of ships out there right now circling the globe, you know, on our ocean. So shipping is critical to the global economy. And I really talk about that in the book because it is important to understand that even if you're inland, landlocked, never saw a ship in your life, our modern way of life depends on them delivering goods on time, getting things to you. So we don't think a lot about our mariners. We don't think a lot about those ships. I think it's time we do.
You were able to interview many family members who lost loved ones aboard this ship. That would have been a tough job, huh? Talk to these folks.
That was the hardest thing I had to do. I have not done this kind of reporting before, and it actually took me about 2 months to be able to pick up the phone and reach out to the first mother. She was generous and kind. Her name was Deb Roberts. She lives up in Maine. I drove up to talk to her, and I'm just really glad that there was a box of tissues nearby. These were very tough conversations, but they were good conversations because I think the family members realized that, you know, I could be a way to communicate the really beautiful and personal details about these people, to really humanize our mariners, the people who were on the ship. I mean, they were human beings just like you and me, and, you know, they had people who loved them, who worried about them when they went to sea. You know, these mariners are gone for 3 months at a time, oftentimes without, you know, access to communication. They don't have the web. They don't have the internet on the ship. And so, you know, you're dealing with a lot of silence, and that's painful. And, you know, these mothers and spouses are brave. They drive their kids and their spouses to the airport, and they let them go, and they hope they come back. And that is the story of the mariner, and that's the story that has been repeated forever, you know, in Greece, in Rome, and, you know, in Europe, and now, you know, in the United States. We watch our mariners go, and we hope they come back.
Rachel Slade also talked with investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board. Heck, she even went to Philadelphia and talked with one of the shipbuilders who built this ship, retired 75-year-old shipbuilder, so a lot of research. Have you ever been out on the open sea much whenever there was a storm, Rachel?
Well, I haven't been out in a storm, but I did take a container ship from Italy to Baltimore over the summer, and it was an Italian container ship. It was a new ship. It was built in Korea in 2010. I have never been in a storm. I've watched a lot of videos on YouTube, and I did a lot of watching, actually, videos on YouTube to try to get a sense of what it was like. And secretly, I guess I kind of hoped that we would see a little weather when we were crossing the Atlantic. But actually, it was just a beautiful, beautiful journey. We had no wind, no weather. But and I think that's, you know, that's what made this difficult for me to write, because I had to imagine it. But there's nothing like being at sea. And it's very addictive to be out there, to be alone, to be unplugged, out of communication, just you, the stars, the sea. It's really quite seductive.
Well, folks, you can hear in Rachel Slade's voice her passion for this story, and very evocative writing, too. Gosh, Rachel, our time is gone. I could talk to you for another hour. This is
me too, Dave.
This is good stuff. We have a nice rapport here. My longest trip. This is kind of funny, actually. My longest trip was across the Irish Sea on a ferry when I sailed from Dublin to Wales. It took about 3 hours, and it was the sea was as calm as glass. So I didn't have any experience of rough seas. All I can feel is what I've seen in the movies and, you know, some of these reality TV shows, and I don't know whether I could take it being out there in the midst of a storm. Well, listen, folks, I've got to scoot here. I've got to let Rachel go. Her book is riveting, it's pulse-pounding, and it's a true story, a sad story. Into the Raging Sea is the title, Into the Raging Sea by Rachel Slade. Nice to meet you and delightful to talk with you today, Rachel.
Thanks so much, Dave. It was a pleasure.
All righty. No, pleasure was mine. Thanks. So long now.
Bye-bye.
What to do? What's the right thing to do? More important, what's the right thing for you? These are some of the questions we ask ourselves when it's time to plan a family funeral. The next question so many people ask is cremation right for us? Well, let me suggest that you talk it over with the folks at Thompson Miller Funeral Home in downtown Butler. They'll help you. They'll answer your questions. Is it appropriate for your family? Should there be a service? And what's the cost? These are the right questions. Thompson Miller can help you with the answers. Cremation offers three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's local. Thompson Miller's cremation services are provided right here in Butler at our own newly created facility. We assure you that your loved ones will never leave our care at any point in the process. So let's talk it over privately right here at Thompson Miller. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
One of our other sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. And that's just what they do, folks. They package your items for shipping. It's really convenient. I mean, you don't have to worry about finding the right size box and where's the bubble wrap and the special labels and the tape and all that. Just take your items up to Gone Postal Butler, and they'll package them for you to ship. And you can ship it any way you want. U.S. Postal Service, FedEx, UPS, your choice. But they do all the work for you. I've utilized their services. It's great. It's fast. It's convenient. It's inexpensive. They also have copying service, scanning, faxing. You can even rent a temporary mailbox there. And, oh, they have local honey there, too. Really, really good. Open Monday through Friday. They're at 140 Shockey Lane. That's just off Newcastle Road. It's right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. Just follow the signs, and there you are. At Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Here's a phone number. Give them a call. Find out more about what they offer. 724-841-0044. Gone Postal Butler. Well, fascinating conversation with Rachel Slade there. And on the next segment of the program, gosh, I've been looking forward to chatting with an acquaintance of long standing. John Aubrey is with us here in the studio today from Aubrey's Dubs Dread Golf Course here in Butler. Johnny, good to see you, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. Good to see you. We've been visiting at some of the golf courses around the area here on the program. It's a good time to do that, spring, whenever golfers are ready to start playing again after a long, long winter. And, of course, this year, winter extended into most of April, which
That's
was
right.
Brutal for golfers and for golf course owners like you guys.
Yep, not very good.
No, hard to get the course in shape. And, you know, we had snow like 20 out of the 30 days in April. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a tough spring.
Well, things have turned, even though we've got kind of a miserable day today. We've had a real taste of springtime weather, and I imagine that the course is in pretty good shape by now.
We're in excellent condition. Mm-hmm. It's just that we need some golfers and some nice weather.
Well, your course, 18-hole championship layout, drains pretty well.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, few wet areas, but, you know, it's every golf course has a few of them, but it's in good shape.
Your course has been 18 holes now for, what, about 20 years, 25 years, something like that?
Since 1981.
Oh, well, it goes back quite a ways then.
Yeah, right.
Gosh, I can remember when you expanded. I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Right.
Yeah. The golf course, Aubrey's, actually was started by your dad, wasn't it?
Correct. My dad and mother. It's just a 9-hole facility, and my brother and I bought some property adjacent, and he and I built the back nine. It took us 5 years, but we did it with some old equipment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can remember playing there whenever the word came that you were going to start adding another 9 holes, and then each year you had a little bit more done, a little bit
right,
more done. I can remember seeing you out there on the bulldozer, for goodness sakes.
Right.
Did you design that back nine?
My brother and I both did, yeah.
You had a pretty big challenge to get 9 holes into an area that
not very good.
Topography is rough. There's a big gorge in there.
We terraced 2 or 3 holes off, and that's what took us so long. You know, it just we had some terracing to do, a lot of rocks, a lot of trees. But
you ended up though with some spectacular views.
It's beautiful. It's really neat.
Par 3 hole, let's see, 10, 11, number 12, the par 3 that's down over a cliff, down into the bottom of the ravine. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's just a little too hard for the average golfer.
It is a challenge.
It's a challenge, and if they just move up a set of tees, they'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. That's not the only cliff, by the way. There's another one on number 16, right?
16,
the par 5.
16, correct, yeah.
Well, hey, it's a championship layout.
That's right.
So what do you do? I know when I'm out there, I try to shoot a good score on the front nine, and on the back nine I say, let's have fun.
Right.
Because
I know
my score's going to be a little bit higher.
Really, the back nine is easier, I mean, for a low handicapper than the front nine. I mean, there's more birdies to be made back here. The front nine's tough. It's long. We've got three or four very long holes, 2 and 4 and 6 and 9. Those are hard holes when it's soft and the air is heavy. It's hard to reach them in two.
You've always had some of the fastest greens in the area, at least in my estimation.
Our greens are just unbelievable. I mean, we keep them at 10 and a half, 11 every day. They're very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very good.
Do you have to do something special to keep them so nice? Because I've played a lot of the public courses around here, and yours are some of the nicest going.
Yeah, I do. I don't roll them. I don't like water on them. Mm-hmm. And we cut them at 90 thousandths.
Wow. So they cut pretty low, huh?
Yeah, really low.
Yeah. And without overwatering, they're very, very fast.
Very fast. Mm-hmm. I don't like ball marks. I like them smooth. So they'll hold good shots, and they won't hold a bad shot.
Aubrey's Dubs Dread is just off Mercer Road. And you're open to the public, right?
Correct.
You have memberships there, too, though, don't you?
We do, Dave. We have a number of different memberships. We have one for $40 a month, unlimited golf walking. We have another one for $1,000 a year, unlimited golf with a cart.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good deal.
A heck of a good deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're doing anything we can do to get heads in the door. I mean, the game is not like it used to be. The younger kids just aren't taking the sport up or into too many sports. You know, they're into soccer and traveling, football and baseball. And parents just don't have time to take them to the golf course. And, you know, some of these young kids, I mean, we have a great junior program. My wife and I, we have like 80, 90 kids in there. And I spend a half hour every other week and I give them a little clinic and You know, the key for these little kids is to get their hands on the club right and get aiming right and get a good posture and leave them have fun, you know. But some of these kids just never take any lessons, and they come out and they don't even know how to carry their bag. They don't know what a divot is. They don't know what a ball mark. There's more to the game than just hitting the ball. There's some etiquette involved.
There have been a great series for, 10, 15 years now. Every time the USGA has a tournament on television, that would be like the U.S. Open, Women's Open, some of the others, U.S. Amateur. They always have a series of public service announcements about the etiquette of the game. Repairing your divots, fixing your ball marks, keeping up the pace of play, and that sort of thing. And they're well done. I'm sure you've seen those commercials many times.
Yep.
The best one I still laugh at it. I haven't seen it for a while. The guy's sitting on the porch, and it's pouring down rain, and he was supposed to play. This other guy comes up and says, you by yourself? And he says, yeah. He says, I think it's letting up. They go marching on him. Well, the reason that I think golf is a great sport, other than the fact that it's a great challenge, it's a lifelong sport. You know, you want to play baseball? Okay, that's great. You can play in high school, and then maybe you can join a beer softball league for a couple of years, but then that passes you by. Heck, you can play golf in your 80s.
That's right. That's right. You know, if your body lets you, you know, like me, I'm 60. I'll be 67, and my hip is hurting. I think I need it replaced, and, you know, and I think it's due to this great game of golf. I mean, I hit so many balls when I was younger, and it's just not a natural sport. Something has to give in your body when you go at it that hard. I mean, look at Nicholas and look at Tiger and all these athletes that are playing this great game of golf. They all had an injury. Some recuperate faster. Tiger, you know, he had a couple of them done, you know, back surgeries. And it's just not a natural game. As hard as those young guys swing at it, something has to give. And you might pay the price later on in years like I am right now.
Well, the great thing about golf is, for people who don't golf, there's a handicap system. So if I would go out today to play a match with John or, you know,
whoever.
Pick a name, Jordan Spieth, my handicap would be much higher than theirs, and everything would equal out. It's designed so that the person who plays the best that day would be the winner, no matter if the other guy is considerably more skillful than you or not.
Right.
I don't know of any other sport that has a handicap system.
I don't either.
Well, that's one of the things that makes it a great game.
Yeah, that's right.
Great social game. You can chat with your partners and your opponents while you're playing.
Except Tiger and Phil. I mean, I don't think they said two words together yesterday.
I had quite an experience yesterday. And I had a threesome. I think Ricky Fowler was playing with him, too. And they all played lousy yesterday.
Well, you know, it's just bad vibes are. When you got bad vibes going and one's not talking and Ricky's in the middle and, you know, it's just. But those two, I don't know. It's just, I think they try to beat each other. The Tiger ended up beating them, so.
Well, they were playing, too, at a tough course, the Players' Championship down there in Florida. I know it by heart, of course, having seen it on TV, especially the famous Island Hole, number 17. But it seems to really challenge the players. It's a tough layout.
Right. Yeah. Tough hole.
Yeah. You've played all over the country.
I have.
John Aubrey, what's the toughest course you've ever played?
Well, if you want to make it really, really tough, probably Oakmont. The NCR club where I played in the Open over there, I thought that was very hard over in Ohio. You know, there's a lot of good golf courses. You know, good and fair or unfair, I mean, I don't know. But Oakmont could be unfair. I mean, you could hit some good shots and end up in a bad position, depending on how your ball bounces and rolls. And
a lot of people today, many professionals among them, Jack Nicklaus is one of them, he says the golf courses are getting too long. Simply because the younger players are hitting it too far, and they just keep making the courses longer and longer, and what they're doing is making some of the iconic golf courses in this country obsolete. Marion would be a good example outside of Philadelphia, right. One of the oldest and most famous clubs, but it's pretty much too short for today. Nicholas says that for the professionals, they need to adjust the ball. They need to make it a lower compression so it won't go as far.
Well, I think Tiger brought it to the next level. And, you know, he started his fitness program, and he says to the other players, if you want to hit as far as me, you better get in the gym and do what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So now they're all in the gym. They're all pumping iron. They're all doing cardio. They're all very strong. And, you know, a short hitter doesn't have a chance out there. I mean, if you can't hit your ball 290, 300, you can't play. You cannot play against those guys that are hitting a 300. You just can't. You can't beat them.
You still playing on the tri-state PGA circuit?
I am, but limited time. You know, I've been doctoring this left hip of mine, and it's hard for me to walk any distance. But I think this winter I might have something done with it.
Well, you had quite a stretch there during the earlier in this past decade where you were knocking him dead on the Tri-State PGA Tour.
Well, it goes in spurts. You know, when I first was 50 and we have a senior division, I mean, I won it like 5 years in a row, the senior division. And now we all take our turn. You know, now I'm 60, I'm going to be 67, and now these younger guys are 49, they're just turning 50, they're darn good too. So, you know, just like the Champions Tour, I mean, you don't see Hale Irwin anymore. You don't see Tom Watson anymore. You don't see Tom Kite anymore.
Lee Trevino.
Yeah. Well, Lee's, in, you know, 75 or 6. But these guys that are just coming off the regular tour and they're 49, 48, now they're 50. The guy that's on a Champions Tour that is 60, he has no chance of beating that guy that's 50. He might get lucky once a year or twice a year, but they're just too good.
I got to tell you, I enjoy watching the Champions Tour more than the regular tour.
I do too.
Most of the time. Now, if it's a major tournament like the Masters or the Open, okay. Right. But otherwise, I'd much rather watch the
Yeah,
the
they're
senior.
Good. Yeah. They can all hit their ball yet, you know.
And they're people that you've heard of, unlike so many of the guys on the regular tour these days.
Right. I mean, and some of them, you know, like Steve Stricker, he just turned 50 or 51, I guess, and he's playing this week, you know, in Florida. And, you know, he's 6 or 7 under, and he's 50 years old. That's pretty darn good.
We'll take a quick break. I want to talk a little bit with John. John Aubrey's our guest, listeners. If you're just joining us, maybe listen to the radio in the car. John Aubrey from Aubrey's Dubs Dread, the golf course here in Butler. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Arnold Palmer. I know John was a good friend and met many times with Arnold during the year. We'll talk about that when we come back. One of our sponsors on the program today is Schnoor's Greenhouse, family-owned and operated since 1889. Wow, that's tradition. They're located off Herman Road. Look for Schnoor Road near the RC Men's Club. Schnoor's Greenhouse, Butler's longtime trusted greenhouse. And boy, this is a great time of the year to stop by. They've got everything you can imagine out there, flowers and plants. Annuals, hanging baskets, great for Mother's Day, by the way. Mm-hmm. Vegetable plants, perfect stop for Mother's Day. And they have gift cards, too. Here are the hours. Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturdays, they're open 9 to 5, and Sundays, 11 to 5. Schnoor's Greenhouse, off Herman Road. Look for Schnoor Road near the RC Men's Club. We'll be back to talk more with our guest, John Aubrey, here on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. Back right after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 4444. The pick 3 is 671-671. The pick 4 is 4225. The pick 5 is 26880. Wild ball for each of those is 2. The Treasure Hunt, 2, 4, 18, 25, and 26. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's Treasure Hunt is $26,000.
For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon. Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
Our hands and wrists are in motion nearly every minute of every day. So when you develop pain, everyday tasks become a problem. And although the causes of pain may vary, the orthopedic hand and upper extremity surgeons at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers diagnose and treat a wide array of conditions. To learn more about hand and upper extremity care, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Welcome back, good friends. Enjoying a chat with John Aubrey. Johnny's the pro at Aubrey's Dubs Dread Golf Course on the Mercer Road. Open for business now that we finally have some good weather. We were talking before we went on the air, John, about the late Arnold Palmer and how much we miss him here in western Pennsylvania. I think everybody in the golf world misses him. You were pretty good friends with Arnie.
Very good. You know, I played in 4 U.S. Opens, and in every open, he would put a note on my locker, John, I'm playing a 10-21 practice round. You're welcome to join me. He always knew his friends from his hometown or a close area. You know, he was just a great guy and had numerous rounds with him at Bay Hill and at Latrobe, and would sit and have dinners together, and I really missed the guy. He was a great guy.
Yeah.
He always treated me good. He just couldn't do enough for me.
I was telling John off the air, when I was 11 or 12 years old, I don't remember exactly when it was, I just started to play golf, and Arnold was in his prime then. I mean, he was at his peak. And I wrote him a letter one day. And I said, you know, if you have time, I would really love to have an autographed picture. 1 week later, I get this big manila envelope in the mail.
Yeah.
And I open it up, and there's a big full-color glossy of Arnold putting.
Yeah.
And in magic marker across it, to David, best wishes, Arnold Palmer.
Yeah.
I still have it, believe it or not. these many decades later.
It's unbelievable. He's just a great guy. A year before he passed away, my wife and I was having dinner with him and his wife over at the house. And after dinner, my wife says, Arnie, could I have something autographed? And he said, what would you like? And she said, anything you want to autograph me. So he got on the phone and called down to the maintenance, down to his barn or a garage or whatever you wanted to call it, but it was filled with all his equipment, golf clubs and shoes. And he told the servant, I think it was a night security guy, he said, in cubicle 72, there's a white pair of golf shoes in there. Could you bring them up? So the guy brought them up, and they were all white, steel spikes that he won the 1960 Masters in the last round. And my wife says, wow, this is really neat. And she says, could you sign them? And so he signed the toes of both of them, Arnold Palmer. Mm. And I have him in my office. Pretty neat.
He was the first guy, if you've ever seen celebrity autographs, most of them are unreadable.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they could have been written by, you know, a drunken sailor at midnight. You can't read anything.
Right.
Arnold always took his time and wrote very legibly when he was signing his autographs, and he said, that's important. I want people to know who it was.
Really?
You know?
Yeah.
A couple of other people have copied him. I guess Jordan Spieth does that, too. He takes
some of
time.
Them take their time, but some of them just scribble it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know who in the heck they are.
How many U.S. Opens did you play in, John Aubrey?
I played in four, one regular and three on the Champions.
Now, you had to go through local qualifying for
that,
right?
Yeah. The senior one's just an 18-hole shootout is all it is. And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the one U.S. Open major that you played in, where was that?
Riviera.
Oh, yeah. Out in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, you make me envious just talking to you about it. Huh?
Yeah, pretty neat. It's good.
Rubbing shoulders with all those guys?
Yeah. Now I'm older and can't hit it very far.
Man, that's incredible. I didn't realize. I knew you'd done it, but I didn't realize you'd done it that
many
times.
And I played in like 7 or 8 PGAs and maybe 27 or 28 National Club Pro Championships.
Mm-hmm. In the PGA, they have X number of spots that they save for club professionals, for teaching pros like you.
Correct.
And you qualified for that several times, too.
I have, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You ever played golf internationally, overseas, and other places?
I haven't, but I might go get my hip better before I'm unable to do it.
You and I will go to Ireland and play. How's that?
Right. Yeah, I wanted to do that.
We'll play Lahinch or
I do.
Ballygowan or something
that would
like
be
that.
Fun.
Ballybunion.
That would be fun. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your course, Aubrey's Dubs Dread. It's an 18-hole championship layout. You've got water.
Creeks and water.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Creeks. You've got hills.
We've got
cliffs.
Hills. Fairways are flat, but you just can't hit them off the fairway, or you're going to have a downhill lie or an uphill lie, and that's what's tough for the higher handicapper. You know, if he can't hit it straight, it's a challenge for him. You know, but the better player kind of likes it. I mean, it's not that hard if you can hit it fairly straight. And it's just the high handicapper has a rough time on her.
Do you require tee times at Aubrey's Dubs Dread?
Well, you know, golf's not like it used to be. I mean, you know, 8-10 years ago, we were all tee times from 7 in the morning till noontime every Saturday and Sunday, and we're lucky to get 6 or 7 now. Just golf's not like it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Golf overall, we're talking nationwide now. The number of players are down. Some people say it takes too long. I don't want to commit to a whole day. Well, if you'd speed up play, it wouldn't take you all day. It doesn't take me all day to play around the golf.
Well, the economy's tough, too. You know, it takes the husband and the wife both to work and make ends meet. And now comes the weekend. He has to cut the grass or trim the hedges or wash the car, or he's putzing around the house. Where, you know, years ago, there was one that had to work, and he had some leisure time to play golf and to
the husband and wife go out together.
Yeah, they went out together, but it's a little different. The generation has changed and everything's changing a little bit.
You also you have a fine pub there, and you have weddings and stuff now.
We do. We do maybe 12-15 weddings a year, and we made my old homestead, my mother's house, into a tea house, and it is booked solid every weekend. Yeah, it's unbelievable what my wife and my daughters have done in there. It's pretty neat. It's like the state-of-the-art tea house. It's pretty good. Yeah.
I remember your late mother so well and so fondly.
Yeah.
She operated there. Yeah. She was in the pro shop for years and years.
That's all she knew. She did 15 hours. And that was nice because I never had to pay her. Now I have to pay these girls.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, the golf season is in full swing now. Today might not be the perfect day, but it's in full swing now. And hopefully, after we finally got through that horrendous month of April, we'll be in for a good summer, hot summer for golf. Huh?
Right. I hope so.
Aubrey's Dubs Dread course is off the Mercer Road. And I can speak personally. It's a lovely place to play. Lovely place to play. John, it's good to see you. It's good to chat with you, my friend.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for inviting me.
We usually do our chatting on the front porch after
right,
I finish playing
right
out there. So.
Yeah.
Good to see you again.
Thanks a lot.
Nice to have you with us, folks, on the It's Your Turn program today. What do we have coming up on Monday? One of our guests will be Andy Steves. I have not met him yet either. His dad is Rick Steves, the guy that does all the travel shows on Channel 13 on PBS. We've had Rick Steves on the program here. We talked with him several years ago. Now his son, I guess, is launching into the same business with travel guides. We're going to talk to him about traveling to the capitals of Europe. So Andy Steves will be one of our guests on the Monday program. I'm Dave Mullarkey. Enjoy your weekend. Don't forget Pirate Baseball tonight right here on WISR as Andrew McCutchen and the San Francisco Giants are at PNC Park. 6:40 is airtime for Pirate warm-up here on WISR tonight. You're listening to WISR 680 in Butler. News coming up next.
Dr. William Saar of Butler Health System with the story of a remarkable recovery.
Come fall, Dale's mind wanders toward the woods. I want the rest of him to follow, but his ankle wouldn't allow it. With the latest technology and our talented caring team, we were able to get him back out there. It's about improving the quality of people's lives every day, and Dale is proof.
At Butler Health